Hello, Columbus, Chattahoochee Valley, all my friends down near the Georgia-Florida line. I hope that you guys are doing okay, and I'm glad to see a couple days of sunshine because we've had a lot of rain around here throughout the past week. So it's good for that for your grass and for your gardens and everything else that you're planting during this time of year in preparation for spring and summer. You know, but I hate a cold rain. You know, if it got to be a cold rain, I'd rather see some snow. And I know some of y'all cringing that I said snow, but you know, all the kids deserve to see some snow every now and then. So we're going to be hold our hopes out that maybe by the end of the month, maybe we'll see a flake or two, something like that. But it's Teddy Reese here. Just glad to be back with you guys. I tell you, this is a blessed season to still be here. And we certainly got to thank God for that. Coronavirus is still out there, everybody. So please make sure that you are continuing to wear your mask, socially distance. Let's stay away from large crowds. You know, if we can, make sure you're using your hand sanitizer, washing your hands often, doing the measures that we need to take to make sure that we are not getting sick. And another thing, too, there's going to be quite a few community meetings coming up here shortly, you know. It's no secret to you guys that we're beginning to see the crime problem escalate again in our community. And we must come together in order to find a way to remedy that. It's not going to be one solution. You know, these are systemic problems that's been plaguing our community for a while. But we'll find a way to fix those. We certainly need to work on our unemployment in this area. It's still extremely high. We got to have a serious conversation about opportunities for our young folks. We've closed down too many of our recreational facilities. They don't have nowhere to go. They don't have a good, safe place to convene. And what that does is it forces them out to the street, and then they fall into the hands of bad influences. That's part of our problem. No one thing is going to fix it, but we got to tackle this from all different angles with everybody at the table. We got to all be at the table to have this conversation. So certainly want to send my prayers to the families that have lost loved ones already this year. I think the last count I saw, we were at 12 homicides for the year. I'm certainly appreciative of Chief Blackman, who joined us last Sunday, the efforts that they're doing to try to work on this. You know, Chief Blackman just became the police chief, so I certainly want to try to give him the requisite time that he needs to try to remedy the situation. As a matter of fact, in my humble opinion, the problems that we're seeing now is a continuation from what we saw at the end of last year. So we want to give him an opportunity to try to work with community leaders, to try to work with our neighborhood leaders, to try to work with elected leaders, and work with our new sheriff, Greg Countryman, the two of them working together to try to rectify some of the situations we have in our community. But as you heard last week, he's certainly available, and he's open for anyone to reach out to him. For our Black History Spotlight today, I want to introduce you to a gentleman by the name of Mr. Edward Farley. Mr. Farley was one of the busiest citizens of his generation. Along with the assistance of his wife, Ella, he was a successful Columbus realtor and developer. Farley was a graduate of Morehouse College and was very active within the local community. He led the local chapter of the NAACP, and he also served as the executive secretary of the Army and Navy YMCA at Fort Benning. His membership within the local African-American fraternal organizations also helped him build strong friendships with other influential civil rights leaders such as Dr. Thomas H. Brewer, Primus King, and A.J. McClung. In 1907, George Foster Peabody and his brothers donated $20,000 that resulted in the first constructed, fully equipped African-American YMCA in the country on 9th Street and 6th Avenue. In 1925, additional improvements were needed to be made to the building, and through funds contributed by the Army and the Navy, board of the YMCA, and local citizens, Mr. Farley led the effort to make it happen. So that's Mr. Farley. He did a lot of work here. He also started a housing community right here at East Carver Heights, and he did that for soldiers that were coming back from fighting in the World War for this country, but could not utilize their rights to the GI Bill because the GI Bill required that you had a new home. And unfortunately, discrimination prevented many of our African-American servicemen who had risked their lives for this country, prevented them from buying new homes. So I'm glad that Mr. Farley was able to do the work that he did for us here in Columbus. And he set a wonderful foundation for us. And that's, those are the type of things that we need to get back to. Real leadership. Leadership making things happen to improve our community. So that's our Black History Spotlight for today. I'm excited about today's guest. I tell you, you guys, this interview may sound a little tough because she's a shy one. She don't talk that much, but I tell you, she is extremely effective and she has touched so many people. When I first moved to Columbus, I would hear about this lady from some of my friends, particularly those working in the banking industry, and they would talk about how they saw her as one of the leaders of the banking industry here and a mentor that they could go to when they needed help. I'm talking about people like Michelle Griffin and other folks in the community who's had the amazing opportunity of working with this lady here that we're about to talk to. And something personally for me, I don't know if I talked about it on any of my previous radio shows, but about a year and a half ago, my wife and my mother-in-law and my daughter, all three got down real bad sick. And I had a lot on my hands, nursing them, taking care of the house. And I talked to this beautiful lady and I told her what was going on. And she said, well, is there anything I can do for you? I said, well, you know that chili of yours that I had? If you can make me a big pan of that chili, it would show help because I could just put it in the microwave and I could feed it to them and I could have something to eat. And she said, I sure will. Y'all, I thought I was going to come back with maybe, you know, like a small bowl of chili, you know, for one serving. She had prepared this big pan of chili. When I tell you, we ate every bit of it. So I am excited to have with me today a mover and a shaker in her own right, a woman who have shattered her own glass ceilings and who have paved the way for so many other folks here in our local community. When you hear folks say that we all stand on the shoulders of those that came before us, this amazing lady here, she has so many people standing on her shoulders. And I know it's by God that she's still standing because she's standing strong and she's still holding many of us up, including me now. And I'm a big guy, but she's holding us up right now. And we're extremely appreciative of that. So if you will, welcome with me to the show, one of my Black History Month highlights, an honoree that I wanted to recognize, David Broadcasting wanted to recognize, Miss Wanda Rutledge. How you doing today, Miss Rutledge?
Oh, I am doing wonderful, Teddy, and thank you so much for those kind words.
Well, Ms.
That is just awesome. I start to say, who is he talking about?
Well, Miss Rutledge, you are deserving of those words and so much more. And we just want to talk about you a little bit today. We got to get in your business a little bit. So, you know, just talk with us a little bit. So, were you born and raised here in Columbus?
I was born and raised right here in Columbus, Georgia. I attended the public schools of Columbus from 1966, graduate of Spencer High School. And I just was brought up here. And I tell you, when I graduated from high school, I was kind of afraid to leave home. Mm-hmm. So I attended Columbus State. It was Columbus State then. No, it was Columbus College then. Now it's Columbus State.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to stay home. You know, my family surrounded me and grounded me. And I think that's a lot of what we're missing today, the family unit. And I think, too, that that's why we're having some of the problems that we're having in the community. But, you know, it was my grandmother and my granddaddy and my mom and my dad and my sisters and brothers. I had, it was seven of us, and I was number six. So I had all those folks over me telling me what to do and protecting me and keeping me safe. So, yes, to answer your question, I was born and raised right here in Columbus, Georgia.
What was it like attending Columbus College in the 60s?
Well, it was different because you know, just 2 years before, I think in 60, maybe 63, was when Townsend was the first black to enter Columbus States. And I came along in 66, September of 66. So it was a little bit different. It was a little bit tough. But, you know, we had teachers in school that cared about us, and they wanted to make sure that we succeeded. So I had the stabilization to keep my head down and do what I need to do. And I attended for a couple of years, and then I got a job and decided I didn't want to go to school anymore, and went to work and then back and forth to school. But it was different. It was really different because it was so few of blacks attending Columbus College at the time.
Was there any, you know, broad level concern about your safety during that time? I mean, that was only 2 years after you say the first black student was admitted there, right? About two, 3 years after the first black student.
About 2-3 years. There was not, and I didn't feel it. And I guess because I was comfortable with who I was, and I knew that I would be, or I felt like I would be protected. And a lot of it had to do, like I said, with my upbringing.
Wow. Wow. So you started working and started going to school on a part-time basis. And what type of work did you start doing then?
I started work at the telephone company. That was one of my first jobs. I always worked because, you know, we were a family that we were doing okay. You know, we didn't realize we were poor. We were doing okay.
Right.
But I started work when I was like in 11th grade, and we had a restaurant, the Tally Ho Grill, and I started out as a waitress. And I always loved people, and that was one way that I got to interact with different people, you know. And from there, I went to work at the telephone company and worked there for about 5 years, got married and had a baby. And then I went to work at Kinetic Credit Union. It was TIC then. Now it's Kinetic Credit Union. And I've been at Kinetic now for 45 plus years.
So that's that start with TIC started your career in banking.
It did.
How did you feel about that? Was banking an area where you wanted to work? Did you ever think that you would start there and 40 years later you would still be there?
No, I really didn't think I would be there 40 years later. But, you know, I started out as the at PBX board operators. They don't even have those anymore. But and the way that I advanced is I was in school, but I was also nosy. I wanted to learn how to do this. I wanted to learn how to do that. And we have what we called a loan disbursement clerk. And my PBX board was right there with her, so I just started nosing around. And I nosed, and she got ready to go on vacation. They didn't have anybody to relieve her, and I said, I can do that. And, of course, that was the beginning of my journey. And I journeyed all the way up to Vice President now of Community Relations, but I worked in HR forever and a day. And then, you know, things change, people change, and I decided, you know, I just want to do something different. But I've been here for so long, how do I just strike out and do something different? And then I was given the opportunity to go out in the community. And with that, that's where I am presently, working part-time just because I really love what I do.
Wow, so you went from a switchboard operator to an executive VP.
Exactly.
Amazing. Amazing. Now, when you started working with the bank, what do you remember what year it was that you started working with TIC?
I started working with TIC in 1978.
So 1978. So 1978, you started working there. What did it look like from a diversity perspective? Did you see other women that looked like you?
I did. There were two other women there before me, and one was a loan officer and one was a teller. Well, I knew I didn't want to be a teller. I just knew I didn't want to be a teller. But I wanted to work at Fort Benning. I wanted to do civil service. That's what my dad did after he got out of the Navy. He was a civil servant. And I just wanted to do that because I knew that that would be an opportunity where I could advance and not worry about as much being black.
Yes, ma'am.
And that was the reason I wanted to get to Fort Benning. You know, I had those 5 years at the telephone company, and I advanced there even, but the reason I left the telephone company was because I had a young child, and you had to work split shifts or whatever, and I advanced there to become a trainer even. So I just kind of like interacting with people, like leading people, but don't want the accolades. I like to be that person in the background that's pushing people. And that's pretty much what the Redina Wilson was, the black loan officer. Dale Allen was the teller. And they were ones that had open arms when you came in and welcomed you to the credit union. And we just went from there.
Wow. So, you know, one of my mentors and great guy, Representative Calvin Smyre, he's well known for saying, if you see a turtle on a post, it didn't get there by itself. And for those that don't understand what that means, it means that all of us at some point need some help from somebody to get where we need to be. And so I guess my question to you is, Ms. Rutledge, there are so many young black leaders, women in particular, that credit you for your contribution to their success, to their development, to their growth. When did you realize that you had gone from this person that was trying to make it yourself to, oh, now I have people looking up to me? Like, you know, how did that transition happen?
Well, I really can't give you just one thing that happened to let me know I was that person. But I knew who I was, and my grandmother taught us, you always help someone. If you can't help them, don't hinder them, walk away, you know. So I always, we believed in the golden rule. You treat people as you want to be treated. And if you were a new person coming on board, or if you were working at CB&T and you wanted to talk with me about what I did at TIC, I was an open book, and you could have all the knowledge that I have, and I would be the one to tell you the decision ultimately is yours, but this is what I would do if it were me. You know, I never tried to just make people do something. I just tried to show them the better way in doing something just by being me, being who I am, not afraid of someone. You know, sometimes we have a tendency to look down at people, or we're not willing to help because we're afraid you're going to take our place. Well, I want you to take my place. Let me teach you how to do this so that you can take my place, and then I can move on to something else.
So I love
we
it.
We just was raised that way, to share. And right now, I love to share. You know, you talked about the chili. I can cook up some chili, and y'all can take it away from here because I don't need to eat it. But I'm going to give you enough that you'll enjoy it or not.
Yes, Rev. And you know, that to me, that just that exemplifies the kindness in your heart and the love that you have for helping others and contributing to our community. Ms. Rutledge, was there ever a time that during your professional career that you felt that you had maybe made some wrong steps, or you were not happy with where you were? And how did you get through that, if you had those moments?
Oh, my God, have I had those moments. I've had lots of moments like that. You know, but I believe that you learn from your mistake. Because you made a mistake doesn't mean that you need to wallow or live in the mistake. You need to admit the mistake. And then let's make sure this doesn't happen again. One thing that I used to say when I was in HR is, if someone messed up really, really bad, I was one to say we need to give them another chance because they will never make that same mistake again. They understand that, you know, the mistake was made, and you just cannot just wallow in it. The other thing is, and my grandmother taught me this, never make a decision when you're angry. Never. She said, because it would always be the wrong one. So when I made a mistake or when I wanted to change jobs or I wanted to quit the job, I had to wait at least 3 days before I could make that decision. By 3 days, it was all over with and we were on to something else. So that was the best piece of advice my grandmother could give me. And it works in your personal life as well as your professional life. And it works for me. I don't make a decision if I'm angry. If I'm angry, I'm just going to walk away and wait 3 days and come back. And now, when I come back in 3 days, if I still feel that is the right decision, then I'm making it.
Then you're making it.
And I'm going with it, and I'm not looking back.
Wow. So. Well, that's great advice. You know, Ms. Rutledge, in addition to being such an inspirational figure and a Wonder Woman to so many other black women, young black women, middle-aged black women here in the city, you also surround yourself with other phenomenal black women in our community. One I certainly think of right off the top of my head is your neighbor and a lady I certainly love so much, Ms. Creola Howard. You know, what was it like for black women like you all to maneuver during a time when not only were we still fighting for some of our basic civil rights, but women in general were still being treated less than men? I mean, even today, there are some women that are still not making the same amount of money as men doing the same job. What was that struggle like? And what was the support base like amongst you and the other women?
The struggle was real, and it is real, and it is still real, but we have to overcome it by making sure, first off, that we're prepared. We're prepared, and when the door opens, we're ready to walk through it. There's going to be there are going to be times when you're not going to get what it is that you feel that you deserve. But I believe in this, in all thy ways, acknowledge him, and he shall direct your path. And a lot of times we have to refer back to the scriptures when we know that we are wrong, being wronged. And you're right in saying that I surround myself with black women that can help me, can elevate me, can move me up where I needed to go. And yet I need to be able to work in a society that's full of white people.
Mm-hmm.
And white people will be white people forever. I don't know how else to say it.
Well,
and there's just going to be some things that, you know, that's not going to go our way. But it doesn't mean we need to tuck tail. We need to stand up for what it is and what's right and then move forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For someone whose life must, that is undeniable that you have lived an extremely successful life, an admirable life, of woman of success, of, as I stated earlier, glass ceiling shattering, you know, just motivational, as Maya Angelou would say, walking around like you got all wheels pumping in your backyard. You know, that tenacity, you know, that walking with your shoulders high, you know, walk heavy, as they would say back down in the country where I came from, that confidence that mm-hmm. you exude.
Mm-hmm.
How
my grandmother
you sustain that?
Taught us to do it with confidence. She said, walk with confidence. Know what you're talking about. And even if you don't know, act like you know, you know. And when you're acting like you know, act like you know with confidence. And, you know, my grandmother taught me a lot of things, but that was one of the other things. That and about getting mad was the two things that stick with me. Always speak and walk with confidence. Now, I'm not a in-your-face kind of person. It's just not me. But I do feel that when I speak, I try to speak with confidence. And when I talk about something, I try to know what I'm talking about, you know, because if you don't know what you're talking about, somebody's going to figure it out anyway. You need to know what you're talking about.
That's right. Well, Ms. Rutledge, I tell you, this has been an amazing conversation with you. And again, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you, my entire family, for your presence in our life and what you did for us and continue to do for us, but certainly during one of the most critical times for us. And I thank God for that moment, because that allowed me to get to know this amazing woman that so many others have spoken about on so many different levels. Let me not forget my friend Teresa Mayo. I cannot say give this interview without mentioning her name. She would get me. But as we wrap up here, Ms. Rutledge, I just want to give you a moment to close and say whatever you want to say to anyone who may be listening out there, you know, taking any direction you want to.
Well, thank you, Teddy. Thank you for the opportunity. It's because of you that I did this today. Because, like I said earlier, I'm not one to just stand out front and, hey, look at me. That is not me. And what I would say to our people, we need to love each other. We need to be sure that God is first in our lives. And if we just follow that proverb, in all thy ways acknowledge him, he will direct thy path. And I truly believe that. And I truly believe we're going to have to come back to our roots in order to take our community back. Our community is in a bad way. And a lot of it has to do with us. And we're going to have to be the ones to take it back. And we just got to start in the home, in the school. And I'll tell you something else, and people don't like to hear this, but we missed a lot as far as upbringing when we integrated our schools. Because when we were in school, when I was in school, probably not you, but when I was in school, that teacher had control of us when we were in that classroom. And if we didn't do what we were supposed to do in that classroom, then you better know by the time you got home, your parents knew. And and with the integration, we're afraid to put our hands out there and put our hands on you for that matter. You know, and I'm not talking child abuse or anything like
that.
I'm just saying that there was a lot more care, a lot more touching, a lot more putting your hands on you, to shake you, to tell you, wake up. You have to do this. And I think we're going to have to get back to some of those basics in order to get our community back.
There's nothing wrong with corrective measures. And I tell you, my grandmother and my mom certainly got me in line plenty of times. And I think I turned out all right. Well, Ms. Rutledge, I am truly honored that you joined us today. And I am honored myself again to acknowledge you as one of our Black History Spotlights for this February Black History Celebration in 2021. So those who have never heard of you or don't know who you are, well, they know now, and they know the impact that you have made in our community in your quiet way. Please tell your husband I say hello, and tell your family.
Thank you so very much.
Hello. Yes, ma'am. All right, and thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
This has been Sunday Conversation with Ms. Wanda Rutledge. I want to thank her again for joining us. Y'all, she is such a phenomenal lady. Give a shout out to Ms. Adeline Henderson over in Talbot County, my friend over there, Jake Johnson, Sheriff Jake Johnson. How you doing, my friend? Mayor Kevin Brown down in Buena Vista. I hope you're doing well, too, my friend. And April Holt down there. How you doing, Ms. April Holt? I hope things are going well with you guys as well. This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. Please join us next Sunday as we have another Black History Spotlight, and we'll do the last one for this month. Take care and stay safe.
Opinions stated by various contributors to this broadcast, its website, and this radio program are not to be considered necessarily the belief of this radio station or Davis Broadcasting. Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversations? Send us an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com.